Hi, let's start our Sabbath school class. Destruction of Jerusalem. So, I want to tell you a little personal story. We have a granddaughter that she lived with us for a while. And then she departed to go out on her own. We gave her some just what I thought fantastic advice. And, of course, she just went and did the opposite. It's like most grandkids or kids do. And so she got doing so bad, so far away, that Sue came to me one day and said, you know, we've loved our granddaughter. Find out who's looking out inside the door and help them come in or get out. One of the two, please. Rob doesn't like crooked pictures. I don't like people looking in and out the door. So, you know, we all got our little flaky things. So, Sue came to me one day and said, you know, we've got to teach our granddaughter a lesson. So I said, absolutely. We've given her good advice. We've shown her love. We've done the right things. She doesn't respect us. She doesn't listen to us. And everything. So when she was gone, we went and burned down her apartment. And then, the next day, just to reinforce the lesson, we went and totaled her car. And we just left her devastated. So, who has a quarterly? With you? Okay, open up and read the first line in Sunday's lesson for me. Whoever gets there first.
Okay, within a few short years, the king of Babylon was to be used as the instrument of God's wrath.
All right, far enough. Read that again, real loud.
Okay, within a few short years, the king of Babylon was to be used as the instrument of God's wrath.
All right, now. You see, we had the right to go and burn down her apartment, and we had the right to go and crush her car because we had done all of these nice things for us, and she did not appreciate nor listen. And so it's strictly biblical because God had His children, the children of Israel. They didn't listen to him, and so he decides, I'm going to take Babylon, and I'm going to come in because of my wrath, and I'm going to level those people. What do you think of that? Robbie!
You have the right to do that only if you built the apartment and bought that car.
Okay, how many kids you got? Let's see. Mel, you've got a little work to do as a grandpa here. So you would have felt better if I would have bought the apartment and then burned it down.
Well, if you had given it, if it was you that had put her in that place,
okay,
and had given her that car, not given it, but, you know, this is mine, you can use it kind of a thing, then you would have had the right to take it away if you want.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying that that's... I'm not going to go too far with that.
Okay. Okay. Oh, well, that's why we have a discussion. What else do y'all think about that?
What lesson do you think that taught her?
Well, she understands when Grandpa and Grandma are mad. She understands that the next time I say, do you want us to burn your next home down? You know, and I've noticed whenever she comes over to the house, she kind of trembles. You know. When we force her to. Yeah, yeah.
So teaches somebody something and they don't do what she says.
Oh, she's doing great with her son. Listen, you don't do good, see that toy? I'll go get Grandpa, he'll come and kill that toy. That's the picture that we have of God a lot that we put out there. Now, it's interesting on Facebook. I have quite a few religious friends that are not Adventists. And I look at Facebook and here they talk about justice and injustice and that God is a God of justice and God is a God that has the right to pour out wrath on people and He has the right. In fact, His wrath would be poured out on us except Jesus died on the cross and shed His blood. And when God wants to pour out wrath on us, Jesus says, "My blood." And God says, "Well, I'd really like to do raw sin, but my son died for him, so I guess I can't." And that's the picture we have of God. Now, despite Robbie, and I'm just teasing him, see, what would you think of a parent that went and burned down their grandkid's apartment in their car?
Kind of conflicting with the idea of the prodigal son, isn't it?
Okay. Appreciate that. See? What act did the father, the daddy, do to the prodigal? What did he do?
Received him back.
Received him back. But he let him go. See? He let him go.
And he gave him his due reward.
Who said that? Okay. And what was that reward? Yeah. Yes, Robbie.
Could the prodigal son blame his father then for everything bad that happened to him, for eating in the pigsty and all the other things? Was that his father's, since his father let him go?
No, that's the key to the story. The key to the story, as Luke says, the son came to his senses. The daddy never changed. And the son never understood who his daddy was. In the pig pen, he did not understand who his daddy was. He did not understand how much he was loved, how much he was cared for, because what did his speech start out with? Father, not daddy, Father, I have sinned. And I am not what?
Worthy.
That's the biggest lie the devil gives every person that separates themselves from God. You are not worthy. And we come along and say, that's exactly right. You are not worthy to God as a father. The only reason God the Father likes you, puts up with you, is that His Son died on the cross for you, and otherwise He wouldn't have a thing to do with you. And then we wonder why people become infidels, atheists. Christianity says, if you know, Ben Carson got in trouble because he said, well, there's no hell. Christianity would rather somebody burn forever in hell and then go worship a God that would do that. As Robert Ingersoll said, if that is what God is like, I want no part of Him. And if that is your true concept of God, who would allow somebody to burn for eternity in hell as punishment, Robert Ingersoll is absolutely correct. Who would want any part of a God that would do that? So we have the children of Israel. Dumb, stupid bunch of people. I don't think you can get any stupider than the children of Israel and Rob Shepherd. Am I right, Rob? I'm not saying that facetiously. You can't get any stupider. I guess stupider is not a word. They ought to be. Than the children of Israel and Ernie Pyle. You can't get any dumber. It's just that Rob and Mai's life, not everybody's sitting there reading it. Now, why did God take His wrath? By the way, that's a quotation from Ellen White. Every once in a while, I'd like to tear up the lesson, the author a little bit. This is a quotation from Ellen White. Why did God's wrath, His anger...
That's enough. The fall of man filled all heaven with sorrow.
Absolutely. Let me get there. Thank you. See, why God's wrath destroyed Jerusalem? Now, let's look at the children of Israel. First of all, I'm ready for Jeremiah, the first one. First of all, let's look in the book of Jeremiah. One of the things that Rob and I and Roger have come to conclusion over the years is, and I've said this many times, the picture of God in the Old Testament is the most beautiful picture of His character, but yet we have defined how different. Christianity will say, well, the God in the Old Testament is different from the God in the New Testament. Do not believe that. The God in the Old Testament is one of the most beautiful pictures of God there are. You have to search, you have to work, you have to look at context, you got to look at the circumstances. You got to see who God was working with. All right, here's what God wanted, as any parent wants for their children. Okay, Ron, nice and loud. Jeremiah
29, verse 10 through 14.
Yep.
And I'm reading the Good News Bible.
Okay.
The Lord says, when Babylonia's 70 years are over, I will show my concern for you and keep my promise to bring you back home. I alone know the plans I have for you, plans to bring you prosperity and not disaster, plans to bring about the future you hope for. Then you will call to me. You will come and pray to me, and I will answer you. You will seek me. And you will find me, because you will seek me with all your heart. Yes, I say, you will find me, and I will restore you to your land. I will gather you from every country and every place to which I have scattered you, and I will bring you back to the land from which I have sent you away into exile. I, the Lord, have spoken.
Yeah. God's plan for His children of Israel all along was that they would prosper. That they would follow Him. And He would allow them, they would allow Him to prosper them, take care of them, to nurture them, to mature them, to help them grow out of love and responsibility. All through the New Old Testament, we say that there's an old covenant and a new covenant. That's bunk. There's always been one covenant. God Himself says, I'm the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And the covenant is very simple. I am your God, and you are my people. That theme is through the Bible, through the Old Testament, all along. It's all I want. I want the privilege of being your God. And I want you to be my people. That's called a relationship. And I want us to grow together. I know that you're going to fall off the path every once in a while. But I'm going to be there to pick you up immediately. I'm going to dust you off and we're going to keep going on down the path. But what happens in real life when your children and your grandchildren don't listen to you. Now, has anybody ever had that problem?
All the time.
See? Can you just keep bailing them out? What do you teach them when you do that? Especially you mothers. Don't look at Sue. It's not directed to Sue. What happens when you keep bailing them out?
No consequences.
What happens if you go out and you plant wheat and you decide you want corn and you get corn? What lesson have you learned? See? And so here's God as a parent of His children. And all He wants is the best for them. He wants His children to go to the best schools, have the best opportunities, to have that love, be able to have love and show love. He has all of these dreams for His children, and His children flat won't listen. Read the next one in Jeremiah.
This is Jeremiah 7, verse 21 and 26. My people, some sacrifices you burn completely on the altar, and some you are permitted to eat. But what I, the Lord, say is that you might as well eat them all. I gave your ancestors no commands about burnt offerings or any other kinds of sacrifices when I brought them out of Egypt. But I did command them to obey me, so that I would be their God and they would be my people. And I told them to live as I had commanded them, so that things would go well for them. But they did not obey or pay any attention. Instead, they did whatever their stubborn and evil hearts told them to do, and they became worse instead of better. From the day that your ancestors came out of Egypt until this very day, I have kept on sending my servants, the prophets, to you. Yet no one listened or paid any attention. Instead, you became more stubborn and rebellious than your ancestors.
Yeah. This is the picture of what sin does to a person. I remember Rob and I sitting in rocking chairs in Augusta, wasn't it? Augusta, Georgia. And we're discussing the sanctuary. You know, here God says, when I brought you out of Egypt, I didn't even think about burnt offerings and all of that. Do y'all get the picture? His desire wasn't to bring them out of Egypt and teach them the sanctuary. His desire was to bring them out of Egypt. He says, I didn't even give burnt offerings a thought. All I wanted was to you be my people, my children, and I be your God, and you listen to me. We share together. And I've sent you prophet after prophet after prophet pleading, crying, begging. And every time I do, you get worse and worse and worse and worse. You get stubborn, stubborn, stubborn. And just like I used to say to my granddaughter, if I told you the sun rose in the east, you would swear it rose in the west. And that's what the children of Israel were doing to God. The very sanctuary, temple that He had given them, they're now offering to their idols. And they're weeping over their idols because the idols aren't responding. God could not do anything with His children. So now He gets mad. Read the next one. Let's see what happens when God gets mad.
This is Jeremiah 13, verse 17. If you will not listen...
Now here it is. Charles, if you don't listen...
I will cry in secret because of your pride.
Oh.
I will cry bitterly, and my tears will flow because the Lord's people have been taken away as captives.
Oh. You sure about that? That's good news, right?
Good news, Bible.
Maybe the Revived says, I'm going to get even with you. No. How does God react? Just like you react when your children or grandchildren go and make some of the most stupidest mistakes a person can make. You have to say, as the daddy said to his prodigal, there's nothing I can do. The key to that whole story is that when the son came to his daddy and said, give me my inheritance, it was not the first time. It was not the second time. It was not the fifth time. It was after time, after time, after time, after time, after time, when finally he had no other option. God is sending to, in this particular thing before the destruction of Israel, He's sending Isaiah, He sent Jeremiah, He sent Ezekiel. Previously He had sent Hosea, Hosea 11, very beautiful chapter, where God says, I raised you from a child. I held you in my lap. I held you by the hand. I taught you how to walk. I fed you. And you want nothing to do with me. Doesn't say I'm mad. I'm going to crush you. I'm going to teach you a lesson. He says, I'm heartbroken. You've given me no other choice than for me to let you go. And so we have the children of Israel. What a history of being brought through Egypt, through the wilderness, to the land of prosperity, to some of the greatest prophets coming and pleading and begging, some of the best kings leading. And they want nothing to do with him. Babylon's coming in to take the city of Jerusalem was set up by the king who God added 15 years to his life. And he took those 15 years and he brought ruination to the land of Judah. Because when they came over to see who was this God that increased your life, they'd all heard this story. And all he did was show him his richness, his temple, what he had gained. And they went back and the king says, man, tell me about that God. They said, we don't know anything about the God, but let me tell you what those guys have got over there. And we need to go and get it. And so God says, with crying, broken heart, I've got to step back. I've got to let them go. And I can't protect them. But even then, He does not give up, because how long did He tell them it would be till they would return? 70 years. Remember, they went to Cyrus and said, Cyrus, got good news and bad news. That's the way they talked back then. Got good news and bad news. The bad news for you, you're losing us as servants. The good news for us, we're going home. Let me show you in this letter. And God moved upon Cyrus to let the people go back. So in the depths of destruction, in the depths of slavery, in the depths of being taken to a foreign land and getting, quote, what they wanted, they didn't want God, they reaped what they sowed. In the midst of all of that, God still had a plan and still gave them hope. And they mess up again. That's the goodness of God. Don't care what you do, how far you're messed up, He's still right there. Now, there is no better place. How much time I got? Okay. No better place on the wrath of God for that term than Romans 1. Because Paul laid it out beautifully. What is the wrath of God? What is the wrath of God that came in and allowed the destruction of Jerusalem? So turn to Romans 1. Ron, my great reader. First verse I have down there for you. What is it? 24 or 26? 24.
And so God has given those people over to do the filthy things their hearts desire. And they do shameful things with each other. And skip to 26.
Okay, hold on for a second. I'll read the first sentence again.
And so God has given those people over to do...
Okay, hold right there. God has given them over. Does anybody look it up, have a different translation? Good news is a paraphrase. Nothing wrong with it because the thought's correct.
God let them go ahead.
God let them go ahead. Anybody else got a different one?
God gave them over in the sinful desires of their heart.
Okay, God gave them over. The King James says God gave them up. See, this is what Paul's saying. What is God's wrath? Don't have time to go through the whole chapter. What is God's wrath? Verse 24, he says, so God gave them over. God gave them up. He let them go for the desires of their heart. 26.
Because they do this, God has given them over to shameful passions. Even the women pervert the natural use of their sex by unnatural acts.
Okay, that's far enough. What's the first words?
Because they do this. Because they do this, God has given them over.
God's given them up. What can you do with a child who looks you in the face and says, you don't know anything. You don't know what's good for me. Only I know. I've got to do my own thing. I've got to do it my own way. I don't want your advice. What do you do with that child? After many times, you've just got to step back. But what do? You do it with tears flowing down your eye, face. You do it with a heart broken. You do it by simply saying, I know exactly what's going to happen. I took my granddaughter at 17 years old. I put it on paper. 5 things that was going to happen in her life. I missed one. And the principle of it I had to correct. Just missed the specific. Now, I could do that at the age of 17 for her. Why? Why? I've had the experience.
You wanted to grow up to be 18 years old.
Wanted to grow up to be a happy lady and a good family. I didn't care if she brushed her teeth with her right hand or her left hand. Wanted to have a chance in life. But we had to give her up. We had to let her go out. We had to let her be thrown out of her apartment. We didn't cause it. What caused it? Her actions. Her choices. Robbie.
I was going to say, you just kind of said it. The better way of saying that parable that you said in the beginning is that if the reason that she was in that apartment without it being burned down was because you're protecting that apartment. And she says, get away from me. I don't want anything to do with you. And you step back, and then the people who are going to burn it down that you're protecting her from.
Could have paid her rent.
Huh?
I said, I could have paid her rent. I could have paid it the next day, month. I could have paid it the third month. I could still be paying it. What am I? Yeah, and what am I teaching her? Gotta learn consequences. All right, verse 20. How am I doing? Oops, 6 minutes. Let's go. Verse 28.
Okay, I'll flip over to King James Version.
Oh, you're a nice person. That's right, man. Hold it. Isn't that worth a dollar? Yep, that's worth a dollar, right? $2? Worth $2, man. That's right. That's right, man. That's worth $2. All right, verse 28.
What do we read about the women doing those evil things? Yeah. Verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient.
Yeah, do you get the picture? That's God's wrath. Not angry. Jonathan Edwards, one of the great preachers, his most famous sermon is A Sinner in the Hand of an Angry God. He says to his congregation, God holds you in the palm of His hand, and it's over a boiling pot, and every once in a while He kind of turns that hand to kind of make you think you're going to slip off His hand and fall into the pot of boiling oil. And so if you better straighten up, you better live right. This is a world-famous sermon from a world-famous preacher. God in the center in the hands of an angry God. Who wants to spend eternity with a person like that? God's wrath is simply when you go so far, you won't listen. He just gives you up. Lets you go. And you have your own thoughts, your own ideas. Sadly, you reap the same your own consequences. The good news is, God is right there to pick you up. Now, if you want the final proof of this, let's look at God's wrath at the end of time. I want to preface this. In the Garden of Gethsemane, as Jesus was being whipped, interrogated, we're told that within minutes that Peter, who had just denied Christ three times, and Judas, who had just betrayed Christ, came face to face with Jesus. And Peter looked into that face of Jesus, crown of thorns on his head, bleeding, looked into the face of Jesus, and Jesus looked at him. And Peter was so touched that he ran out to the Garden of Gethsemane, and he sat there and he cried like a baby, brokenhearted for what he had done to Jesus. Judas came across the same face, the same compassion, the same person. And he saw that face of Jesus and he went out and hung himself. Same person, same face, two different results. John tells us in the book of Revelation that Jesus is coming. What do the righteous do? What do they say? Oh, this is our God. We've been waiting. They're waiting. Loving. What do the wicked do? What do the wicked do? Why? Why? Same God? Same Jesus, same news, same event. The righteous say, God, this is our God. The wicked run. Because you see, it's what's in the heart that makes all the difference in the world. It's not a thing that God does. Sin and separation cannot exist with the life giver. God doesn't have to come back and be angry. God doesn't have to come back and say, "Woo, love you guys now. You guys." He's the same. You're seeing the same picture, the same event, the same God. Why did the ark sit there for 7 days before anything happened. Pardon?
It was waiting.
I can't hear you.
He was waiting.
Waiting for what? Absolutely. People worship nature, and here comes animals, 7x7, 2x2, here comes the birds, they're all sitting there, here's this boat, its door is shut by the angel, and they're sitting there. For 7 days, the people pondered their situation, they looked at it, they said, what would happen on day 4, somebody comes up, knocks on the door, and says, I want in. What would happen? They absolutely will make it, Jim. Absolutely will make it. To say otherwise is unfair to God. What do you think they sat there for 7 days for? God was visiting another universe and says, I don't have time to get back to you. Why do you think we have the investigative judgment? What if one person in the investigative judgment says, wow. God says, come on home. But they're so settled in their heart, it does not move. And God turns to the universe and says, I'm not mad. These are my children. I'm crying. I'm brokenhearted. But they won't have anything to do with me. I've got to put them out of their pain. That's the God we serve. My Father, thank you for your love, your kindness, your graciousness. I think there's several in the room are just as dumb and stupid, just like the children of Israel. I'm one of them. Thank you for who you are. In Jesus' name, amen.